the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey, good morning, and thanks for joining us today here on AgNet West, Farm City Newsday. Moving right along into today's program headlines, Brian German is talking with us about the movement forward with alternatives to ag burning. Also in today's program, you get the details on a specialty crop multi-state program that's awarding $10 million in funding. Before we hear those reports, I'm starting off today's program with information on how you can submit a comment on WOTUS before the deadline comes this Friday. Let's jump right in. This week is the last chance for farmers to voice their opinions on the waters of the U.S. before the Environmental Protection Agency rewrites the rule. Farm Bureau Senior Counsel for Public Policy Travis Cushman says commenting is simple, but folks only have a few days.
I would encourage everyone to go ahead and submit their own comments. The deadline is this Friday, September 3rd. And if you're interested in finding where that is, it's on fb.org under advocacy. We have an easy link for you to do that.
Cushman adds a recent District of Arizona court ruling to vacate the rule brings along some uncertainty.
That's made a big question mark. There are three other cases where the courts have refused to vacate or disrupt an apple wash protection rule. This is the first time that a judge has said that the rule is vacated. We obviously disagree with the decision, but it's left a bit of a question mark as to what this actually means. But again, we still do encourage folks to go ahead and submit their comments to let EPA know how we feel about this.
For more information, visit www.fb.org/advocacy. Now let's take a listen to these next reports with AgNet West reporter Brian German.
The California Clean Biomass Collaborative is looking into viable alternatives to agricultural burning. President and CEO of the Western Agricultural Processors Association, Roger Isom, explained that old technology biomass plants to generate electricity became too expensive, and the newly formed collaborative aims to find a suitable alternative.
So what we've got to look at now, is there a replacement for that old biomass technology? People are talking about, you know, taking woody biomass and creating renewable diesel, cellulosic ethanol, using pyrolysis to create electricity, creating hydrogen fuel, creating biochar through a pyrolysis process. Well, there's a lot of talk about those out there, but none of them have got to the point where we're actually seeing plants built. So what the goal of this collaborative is to first, like, okay, what are all the possible technologies that are out there? What are the hurdles to getting those things to fruition and getting them built? You know, we've heard everything from CEQA to just capital costs to other environmental concerns. Maybe it's water use, you name it. But then I've had people come and tell me that, hey, we're going to build a cellulosic ethanol plant that's going to take 500,000 tons of woody biomass out of the valley every year. And the fuel's already sold. They said the cellulosic ethanol out of it, that has a value for low carbon fuel, and refineries are already wanting to buy it. Well, if that's the case, why isn't the plant built? So our hope is through this collaborative that we'll be able to start identifying those and see if we can't get some of these to the finish line and help take some of that stuff that would have been burned and put it in a much cleaner environment, controlled environment, and, you know, minimize or even hopefully eliminate emissions and solve the problem for us that, you know, where we can't burn anymore, because we're agriculture, right? We are going to produce woody biomass, whether it's prunings or, you know, unfortunately, because the implementation of SGMA, the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, where, you know, water is being cut back throughout the valley, we're going to be pulling more vineyards and more orchards out. What are we going to do with that biomass? We need a solution. We hope that long term, there's got to be some alternatives out there to the old style biomass. And hopefully through this group, we can find what those are and get them built.
Industry analysts are projecting that as pistachio production increases, overall demand will be able to keep pace. As more pistachio acreage comes online, overall production will continue to increase. However, senior analyst of horticulture for Rabo AgriFinance, David Magana, pointed out that expectations for market demand should balance out the increase in production.
We're obviously expecting an increase in shipments given the increase in plantings over the last few years that will result in increased bearing acreage going forward. And we're expecting that under standard market conditions and the economic recovery that we're seeing starting from this year, that the global market and domestic market will be able able to absorb these increased pistachio supplies from California. Like in other trinats, the U.S. pistachio industry relies heavily on exports. So we're expecting that in the next few years, we're hoping that we have a freer access to some Asian markets. And at the same time, expecting that the EU will continue demanding more pistachios. And also in the domestic market, the per capita consumption has been growing particularly fast over the last 5 years. So those factors will continue to play a relevant role going forward about boosting the needed demand for these increased supplies.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Adam Peters of USDA's National Agriculture Statistics Service talks about the history, intent, and changes within its farm computer, now known as the Farm Technological Use Survey.
Our computer, or as we're calling it these days, our technology use survey, is done as part of our June agricultural survey. The June agricultural survey is conducted every year, but the technology use is every other year. So this report comes out every other year. It comes out in odd numbered years, I believe going back to 1997 as a formal part of the June agricultural study.
And just as modern technology has evolved, Peters says NAS has evolved its survey.
Every year, NAS evaluates the program as we go into this survey, and we look at how the technology has changed and whether or not we should update our questionnaire to reflect that. And this year, there were several changes to the questionnaire, and we collected data on the ways people connect to the internet, and we included things like cell phones and tablet computers, broadband, satellite internet, things like that, that are more diverse ways to connect to the internet than just a 1990s modem dial-up connection.
For more information on conducted surveys, you can visit www.nass.usda.gov. Right now, it's time for us to head out for a short break. We'll be right back with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds. BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture.
Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley State and Nation, providing reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money and use water effectively. With in-person events back again, the folks from Wild Eye look forward to seeing everyone at the upcoming Crop Consultants Conference in Visalia or the Western Groundwater Conference in Burbank. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on WildEye. Visit them today at mywildeye.com.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. In today's national headline, sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Association of Farm Broadcasters. The Department of Agriculture's quarterly trade forecast shows that U.S. agricultural exports not only continue at a record-setting pace for fiscal year 2021, but they will eclipse the 2021 total in fiscal year 2022. The August forecast is USDA's first look at expected exports for 2022. Following the report, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says of farmers and ranchers, quote, "Global demand for their products is a testament to their quality, safety, and commitment to sustainability, and has led to a projected new record in U.S. agricultural exports," unquote. The fiscal year 2021 forecast of $173.5 billion is $33.8 billion, or 24% higher than the 2020 final total, and nearly $17 billion above the previous record set in 2014. For fiscal year 2022, U.S. farm and food exports are projected at a record of $177.5 billion, topping 2021's forecasted level by $4 billion. The increase is primarily driven by expected record exports of soybeans, horticulture products, dairy products, and sorghum. These headlines are brought to you by NAFB and sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation. Now back to the show.
You're listening to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now for more agriculture news, here's Randall Wiseman with today's livestock report.
Well, in today's livestock news, while U.S. beef and pork exports have achieved impressive volumes in 2021, port congestion and other shipping obstacles continue to frustrate exporters. U.S. Meat Export Federation's Joe Sheely has more details.
Shipping obstacles continue to be a challenge for U.S. red meat exporters, especially those utilizing West Coast ports. Travis Arp, U.S. Meat Export Federation's Senior Director of Export Services, has an update in this USMEF report.
We're still seeing difficulties on the shipping side for U.S. exporters, and really I would say that it's gotten a bit worse over the last several months. I mean, we're coming into a critical time for imports into the U.S., and the numbers that the U.S. ports are reporting in terms of imported container volume is starting to tick up, and with back-to-school season and starting to get into holiday shopping, that volume is really only going to continue to compound the issues that never fully got cleared up over the summer months. Exporters are looking at any viable options to get containers out of the country as quickly as possible, trying to identify other ports that have less congestion. We've heard anecdotes from members utilizing the East Coast ports or Gulf Coast ports to get product out to Asian markets. So that's adding 2 or 3 weeks of transit time, but ultimately that's still a faster option than having a container sit on the West Coast for multiple weeks until it can finally get on a vessel.
As the situation intensifies, it is getting more attention on Capitol Hill.
There was recently bipartisan legislation introduced in the House, which is really an effort to address some key issues holding product up throughout the U.S. So first and foremost, increase the enforcement of the Federal Maritime Commission to enforce their detention and demurrage charges and hopefully get some respite for the exporters there who are incurring demurrage charges as product waits for a vessel. The other aspect is trying to incentivize carriers to export loaded U.S. cargo rather than carrying those containers back empty to help clear out this backlog of containers that we see on the West Coast.
For more information, please visit usmef.org. For the U.S. Meat Export Federation, I'm Joe Sheely.
Thanks, Joe. And last week, the U.S. Department of Agriculture issued a guidance document on how the department will enforce the final rule on undue and unreasonable preferences and advantages under the Packers and Stockyards Act. The guidance comes as USDA composes new rules to bring fairness to the marketplace for farmers and ranchers. The National Farmers Union strongly supports strengthening the Packers and Stockyards Act to protect livestock producers from unfair treatment and practices by meat packers and integrators. In response, NFU President Robert LaRue said, "We welcome USDA's newly released guidance, which demonstrates a further commitment to strong enforcement of the Packers and Stockyards Act." USDA says the proposed rules will strengthen the department's enforcement of unfair and deceptive practices and undue preferences, and says the enforcement policy commits USDA to defend farmers to the maximum extent possible. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West.
The Dairy Pandemic Market Volatility Assistance Program. It was announced last week by Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack as payments to dairy farmers who received a lower value for their products due to market abnormalities caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. Explaining how it works is USDA Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs, Jenny Moffitt.
This will be payments that will reimburse qualified dairy farmers for 80% of the revenue difference per month based on their annual crop production up to 5 million pounds of milk for sales from July through December of 2020.
She adds independent handlers and cooperatives per agreement with USDA will distribute program payments, with payments varying by region based on fluid milk losses. More details are available online at www.ams.usda.gov. Type the word dairy in the search bar to find the link to AMS's dairy program. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
You're listening to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds. BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture.
Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley, state, and nation, providing reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money and use water effectively. With in-person events back again, the folks from Wild Eye look forward to seeing everyone at the upcoming Crop Consultants Conference in Visalia or the Western Groundwater Conference in Burbank. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on Wild Eye. Visit them today at mywildeye.com.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Neal. As we mentioned yesterday, I had the opportunity to talk with Ventura County Ag Commissioner Ed Williams. We talked all about the theme of their 2020 Crop and Livestock Report, which highlighted the women in agriculture across the county. Today, let's take a listen to Williams dive into the top 10 producing commodities. All right, let's get into some of the fun stuff about the crop report, which is the top producing commodities. So give me a breakdown of what those top commodities were and maybe talk about the total production value.
As always, we kind of do a little focus on the top 10 commodities every year for the county. Strawberries has been our number one for quite a while now. And it actually, the value of strawberries went up this year pretty significantly, from about $500 million to $575 million this year. So a very nice, significant increase for strawberries. And I think a lot of that was just the high value. The prices went up pretty well for us, and production was stable for strawberries. Lemons also kind of a surprise. It's not at the level it was several years ago, but they actually went up about 2% last year, which we saw a pretty significant decline the previous year in 2019 because of COVID. COVID kind of affected the restaurant trade, and we thought that lemons are very used a lot in the restaurant trade, and so they took a little bit of a dip, but last year they rebounded some, so that was a real positive thing for our lemon industry. And lemons in Ventura County are one of several crops that are we produce more lemons than any other county in the state and any other state in the country. So that's one of our top crops for us.
Wow.
And nursery stock actually had a nice increase last year. And you would think that there wouldn't be a lot of work outdoors, but I think a lot of people stayed home and kind of focused a little bit on their home environment. And so the nursery trade seemed to do real well. And then avocados did real well last year, very well. I think we had a 30% increase in our value with avocados from the prior year. And part of that, I think, is because of the cyclical nature of avocado production. It has an up year and then a down year a little bit. And so it varies from year to year on production naturally. But then the market prices did real, real well as well. And the demand was seemed like it was very high for avocados as well. Raspberries are one of those areas that we saw a little bit of a surprising decrease in this last year. Pretty significant decrease in the value. But we had other crops like strawberries and blueberries that kind of seemed to make up some of that difference pretty significantly. Blueberries in particular, this is the first year that they hit our top 10, and they came in at number 9, but they were 120% higher reported value this year than they were last year. So
Wow, that's a huge change.
Yeah, huge difference, big difference. And the marketing has been going really well for blueberries. So one of the biggest hits that our county took, and overall, I think there was a trend that the vegetable crops did not do as well as our fruit crops. Our fruit crops did real well. Vegetable crops really took a hit last year. And I think a lot of that has to do with COVID, and celery in particular is a big food service mm-hmm. item that is used in a lot of schools, and it's used in a lot of restaurants and mm-hmm. and those kind of things. It took a really big hit. And last year, it was, I believe, number two in the county at $244 million. And this year, it was way down to maybe my numbers. I better check that. <to see. laughs> I may be misquoting my numbers here. But really significant hit for celery this year. Yeah, $243 million last year, and only $126 million this year.
Wow.
So big, big hit. Last year and the year before, the market seemed to take a big upswing. There seemed to be a lot of people using celery in energy drinks and those kind of things, I'm not sure energy drinks is the right word, but kind of health drinks.
Like juices, that's
yeah, juices
thing.
And those kind of things. And so it went through a really big swing, and then this last year it all kind of didn't fare anywhere near as well. So a little disappointed with that. Tomatoes held their own. They did very well last year, stayed in at number seven for us. And then peppers had a little bit of a decrease, but maintained their eighth place in our annual crop report. And then our 10th slot this year, cabbage came back. It came back into the top 10 2 years ago, and then for several years it had been right there at that number 10 slot. Last year, surprisingly, industrial hemp hit number 10 for Ventura County, and this year they dropped out altogether. And that was one of the most significant reductions in total value for a particular crop. 2019 was the first year that we had industrial hemp produced, and Ventura was, I think, third or fourth highest acreage in the state for industrial hemp, and we had about a $35 million value for our hemp crop. This year it was clear down to about $5 million in value. So big, big loss there. Part of that, I think, is just oversaturation of the market and the inability for the hemp producers to sell their crops. We still have some hemp growers that still have some inventory on hand from 2-3 years ago that haven't been able to move that crop. So,
partially, I would assume, too, a lot of like the harvesting and mechanization and storage and processing, that quite hasn't come through full circle for the for hemp as well.
Yeah, and there's still some issues with the legality of selling CBD products and some of those kind mm-hmm. of things in food products, and so that's all. There's still a little uncertainty there for the hemp growers. The other crop that we really had a big, not a big loss, but it dropped out of our top 10 for the first time since 1983, was cut flowers. Mm. And so that had to do, I think, with a lot to do with weddings mm. and public events and those kind of things, along with competition from South America that has been increasing year over year, making it difficult for the California growers to make cut flowers work.
It is time for us to head out for a short break. We'll be right back with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds. BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture.
WildEye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley, state, and nation, providing reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money and use water effectively. With in-person events back again, the folks from WildEye look forward to seeing everyone at the upcoming Crop Consultants Conference in Visalia or the Western Groundwater Conference in Burbank. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on WildEye. Visit them today at mywildeye.com.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. In today's national headline, sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Association of Farm Broadcasters. The Department of Agriculture will host webinars on African swine fever as part of an African swine fever action week, September 13th through the 17th. USDA will host daily webinars to learn more about African swine fever and its global spread, actions the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service is taking to safeguard the U.S., and biosecurity measures you can implement now to protect the U.S. herd. The Action Week is part of the continuing efforts to respond to the detection of African swine fever in the Dominican Republic and prevent its introduction into the United States, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. ASF has not been detected in Puerto Rico or the U.S. Virgin Islands, and USDA is committed to keeping it out of both islands and the rest of the United States. APHIS is taking this additional action to further safeguard the U.S. swine herd out of an abundance of caution. The Interior Department announced the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has opened new or expanding hunting or sport fishing opportunities across 2.1 million acres. The increase is the largest expansion of outdoor recreation opportunities in recent history. The increased recreational access includes 88 national wildlife refuges and one national fish hatchery. Secretary Deb Haaland states, quote, "Increasing access to outdoor recreation opportunities is essential to advancing the administration's commitment to the conservation stewardship of our public lands," unquote. The announcement expands 910 opportunities for hunting or fishing, as an opportunity is defined as one species on one field station. The announcement brings the number of units in the National Wildlife Refuge System where the public may hunt to 434, and the number where fishing will be permitted to 378. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says hunting, fishing, and other outdoor activities contribute more than $156 billion in economic activity in communities across the United States. These headlines are brought to you by NAFB and sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation. Now back to the show.
You're listening to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. And now for more local news, here's Brian German.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture has announced that a total of $10 million in grant funding will be available for the 2021 Specialty Crop Multi-State Program. Grants are awarded to state departments of agriculture to help support collaborative multi-state projects that address issues of food safety, pests and disease, research, and marketing and promotion for specialty crops. Administrator of USDA's Agricultural Marketing Service, Bruce Summers, said working across state lines helps foster collaboration and the sharing of information to help address some of the challenges for specialty crops and helps improve the competitiveness of the industry. State departments will need to work with organizations such as nonprofits, producer associations, universities, and other state agencies that are located in at least two different states to qualify for the program. Funding awards will be made available next spring for projects that have a performance period of 36 months. After screening proposals and submitting applications, state departments will be assuming responsibility for administrating projects that are selected for funding and will be tasked with establishing subgrants and/or contracts with partners to facilitate the project. The deadline to apply for the program is December 6th. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit Agnet West online at agnetwest.com. Get even more connected by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching at Agnet West, and our team of Brian German at Brian German Agnet West and Danielle Leal with at D Leal Agnet West. This has been Farm City Newsday by Agnet West.